All right. Give you some opening introductions to the teaching this morning. You can turn over to 1 Corinthians 7. We'll get there at some point. We're dealing with now teaching on marriage, teaching on, we're specifically in the last week or two and this week and probably next week as well. We're going to deal with some of the problems and problems that are in a marriage and try to how to work through some of those things. And try to give you those things. But last week, I was actually going to teach this last week, but we had, I think, how old is Zach? Is he 12 or 13? Or Alex, 13. And we had a 13-year-old in here, so I'm not going to teach that problem with them in the house. So we talked last week a little bit about money. We talked about money last week, all those sort of things with a marriage that will present its own problems. Money is a big issue nowadays. These are the big three are this. They are sex, their money, and their in-laws or family. Those are the three things you'll find in a marriage. And sex is the first one. It's the biggest problem in a marriage. And it's one of those things that if it's not communicated about, not talked about in that relationship. But I mean, think about it this way. The relationship between a husband and a wife is a romantic relationship. It's a relationship that you will only, or you're supposed to only have it with your spouse. And so it's like no other relationship that you're going to have in this world except the relationship you have with the Lord Jesus Christ. Because we are the bride of Christ. He's the groom, we're the bride. So there's a lot of things we're going to draw similarities about even today. But we'll talk about those things. So it's the problems we find in a marriage mostly are caused by one party and the other party having different priorities within that relationship. In other words, it's what you said is the most important thing down to the least most important thing. And what you'll find, this is you look at any counseling or any psychiatrist, all that kind of teaching is. And they're simple questions. They ask people, what are your priorities in a marriage? And ladies, what are your priorities in a marriage? And what you will find out every time is this, they're not the same. What a man esteems more important or very important in a relationship, a woman doesn't. You guys that have been married more than 10 or 15 years, you know that. You know that. And so it's those things that... especially sex within the marriage, that relationship within the marriage, that's an important thing. What you'll find, all the stuff you can read about this, is men value or have a higher priority on those relations as opposed to a woman. She won't. A woman, her priority on that relation might be 6 or 7 or 8. A fella, it's 1, 2, or 3. It's in the top 3 for sure. And so that's why... that communication has to be open in the marriage. You have to be upfront with each other because here's, if a guy has a desire here and the lady's desire is down here or vice versa, what happens? What it generates in your mind? First of all, it places doubt in your mind. Like, well, does she really love me? Is she not attracted to me? Well, no, she's just on a different page than you. And those things have to be talked about. Many men think it's more important for certain things. Ladies are different. Women, on this aspect, they desire an emotional attachment in their relationship. There's an that's why just my wife will tell me, just give me, just hold me. Well, can we kiss too? Or no, just hold me. I was like, where's this going? Because I got to be somewhere, you know. Yeah, that's how I can speak as a man. That's how a man is. That's how a man speaks. And I'm sorry my children have to be here. We haven't hugged in months, so I'll just let you know. Absolute excuse this morning, but women wanted that emotional attachment in a relationship. That's what they desire. What's, you know, in the day and age in which we live, the 30s, 30 year old and under, those gals there, they talk about toxic masculinity, which I don't believe in that. What I believe, do I believe a man can be toxic? Sure. I believe a woman can be toxic too. I don't believe in toxic masculinity because they can't define masculinity, what a man's supposed to be. We've covered these things. Remember we talked about the positions within that relationship, what a man's position is, what a woman's position is. And so a woman, she desires that emotional attachment in the relationship. Fellas, I'm giving you some great information this morning. You ought to know that. And knowing that, you ought to maybe be a little wiser in that relationship. My wife and I talked about many things prior to getting married, but the top of our list was the moment we could not sit down and discuss something was the moment we were in huge trouble in our marriage relationship. Because once you, and trust me, I have been there. I'm sure she has been there. She's not here this morning. She's in the back. But I have been to places where you get so mad and frustrated, like, and you try to talk and they don't want to talk or you don't want to talk and the communication breaks down. That's a big trouble. That's a big problem. And so, fellas, ladies are looking for that emotional attachment in a relationship. That's what they're looking for. A man, on the other hand, a man, he desires the physical attachment, the physical attachment. Ladies, you know, the idea as a man just is thinking about that. He's thinking about that relations and all those sort of things. And that's true. Men desire the physical attachment and they want that before they invest themselves, before they invest themselves. They want to know that they're in a relationship, a monogamous relationship. A man desires those things. And so what you'll find within a marriage is a man's desire or a woman's desire for sex are not going to be on the same plane. They're going to be different. The single guys in here, the single ladies in here, you have to understand that. Why? You're going to find throughout that marriage relationship, those things are different. They're not on the same page. It's not necessarily a bad thing either. I had to read stuff on, if a couple's on the same page, they have problems too. But it's one of those things, what you fellas think is most important, the ladies not, and vice versa. That's how that relationship is. You don't think the same. You don't act the same. My wife's perspective, a lot of times I'll ask her about things. Her perspective is sometimes something that I never even thought about. Or it's a perspective I haven't delved into or thought about much. And so you get that sort of thing. But that's part of that relationship. It's a difference there. Let me ask you this. In the relationship to Jesus Christ, do you think like Christ thinks at all times? You don't. You don't. I mean, I've got the relationship of marriage is like no other relationship. It deals with that. I had to turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter number 7. So there's a proper romantic relationship that is given here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And we'll see those things. First of all, look in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse number 1. This was actually something that the Corinthian church wrote letters to Paul and said, we got some questions about this, we got some questions about that. Notice he says here in verse number 1, now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. So the early church here had problems with this thing and wanted to have Paul to help them or counsel them in what they should do and how they should conduct themselves. He says, now concerning the things they wrote to Paul, had to be about what? These relationships, about the romantic relationship. And he says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. That's not a husband and wife in verse number 1. That's just a man and a woman. So in the church, we teach this. The scripture teaches that they're not supposed to have sexual relationships prior to marriage, prior to that commitment. And there's a reason for that, because it's good for a man not to touch a woman. Notice, look at verse number 9. But if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it's better to marry than to burn. The problem with touching in a relationship prior to marriage is that touch, you married folks know this, that touch will always take you further down the road. That is a normal aspect of the human relations is, especially for a husband and wife, is, I made mention of this early on. I said a look will lead to a touch and a touch will lead to an act. That's how that works. And, of course, this is not something I have to teach to anybody. It comes with the equipment, we say a lot of times. Unless you are, Paul talks about later, we might get into it. He talks about eunuchs. There's three different eunuchs listed in the Bible. Those that want to be eunuchs for Christ's sake, those that are made eunuchs by men. And those like Paul, he ascribed to that relationship where he didn't need a wife. He could be solely focused on the Lord. So there's different eunuchs, if you will, in the Bible. But he's talking here about just a man and a woman. He says, good for a man not to touch a woman. Look what he says. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication. So here's the thing that is missing in our culture nowadays is, you know, everybody says, well, we're going to live together for a while and check it out. Well, first of all, we've brought this up in the past. We'll deal with it probably next week as well. A marriage in the sight of God is flesh joining flesh. Okay? So a marriage isn't you standing before a preacher and the preacher, you know, giving the vows out and you're repeating vows. That is a ceremony. A marriage in the Bible, according to the Bible, is flesh joining flesh. So he says here, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. So in this day and age, we tell our folks, we tell people the proper way to do things is withhold yourself until you get married. That's how God had it. And he says, even if it gets to a point where you're desiring one another and you're going to bring in relationships into the relationship, he says the best thing you have to do is just get married. Because he says, what's he saying, verse number 2? Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife and let every woman have her own husband. Now, this would be more probably for older folks. You know, you get 30, 40s, 50-year-olds. You know, they don't have to date for 5 years or 10 years, right? Now, you would say teenagers, no, you're going to have to wait. And it's a good thing about, you know, people don't understand. Listen, if a woman can withhold herself and a man can withhold herself in that relationship, that's a great truth because that's someone who says, you know what, I'm not going to give in to the desires of my flesh. My flesh wants to do that, but I'm not going to give my flesh that opportunity. And so that's why Paul writes this way. But he says, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife and let every woman have her own husband. He says, let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. That's kindness or well-meaning. That's goodwill. That's how a fellow is supposed to render unto his wife those things, kindness, due benevolence. And likewise, also the wife unto the husband. So we've all been around. My parents used to get in arguments, verbal arguments, you know, and they like to be labeled the Bickersons. That's what it was, the Bickersons. Mom would complain to Dad about him going fishing or golfing or playing baseball or softball. Mom would, you know, vice and Dad would complain to her about buying too much stuff. And the kids would be like, ah, we'll see you later. And we would walk outside. There goes another episode of the Bickersons, is what we used to say. And it's one of those things where you have to allow kindness. That's why that benevolence is given to each party to carry around with kindness. And that's what's supposed to occur. Verse number 4, the wife hath not power. Now, this is in that sexual relationship. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise, in the context, fornication, verse number 2, all those sort of things. But the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. So when we get before a crowd and we have a ceremony and we say you're committed to this person and only this person, you're given to this, you know, we tell the man you're given to the woman you're given to the man. You are for each other. It is for nobody else. This is a relationship, I put out earlier, it's a romantic relationship. It's not unlike any relationship in the world, but that's the reason why. You know, you are given for her what she wants and she's given for you and vice versa. That's what he says there in the verse. And so the wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. And so you're supposed to be given to each other. He says, look at verse number 5, defraud ye not one the other. All right, when it comes to that relationship, one party or the other they'll use sex as a tool or a weapon. I've known plenty of guys who, you know, like confided in me and said, well, my wife, you know, I got to do A, B, C, and D and do backflips and do this and that before she'll have sex with me. Well, that's wrong. Biblically speaking, listen, he says here, defraud ye not one the other. There should be no defrauding. And this creates a problem. It creates a problem in the household when, you know, you got a wife and she's telling you, well, I'm tired now, I got a headache. or you got a husband and say, well, you know, I got too much stuff going on at work. I'm just not into it right. And so all that kind of stuff. Now we'll talk about the benevolence, the kindness that needs to be used there. But when it comes to that relationship, folks, listen, verse number 4 says this. It's kind of like, oh, I don't want to put this. I might even let that one go. It's hard to put things a certain way. You know, you got to watch the crowd. There are different things. I mean, a guy sort of went to Bible school like myself. We get a classroom full of men. There's things you can say to men that you wouldn't say to a woman, and vice versa. There's things you'll say to a woman you don't really want men in attendance. And so we'll leave it at that this morning. But this relationship here, sometimes part of it is you're going to please the other person just because you love them and because you're thoughtful toward them. Now, there's a balance there, right? Boy, I've had the conversations that way, too. And I don't even want those conversations. That's why we teach on these things, trying to avoid having people come and say, hey, preacher, can we talk to him? Like, no, I don't want to talk. You know, someone who is really good on this, believe it or not, is my mom. Verse number 4, my mom was, she understood that. She rebuked us many times as young men because she said, you have no idea what it's like when you give yourself to somebody else. And I didn't understand what she was saying at the time. I was just a teenager. Late, I think I was 18 or 19. I didn't understand it until later on in life. But that's what Paul's touching on. He's touching about those things there. When it comes to this relationship, it isn't about what you're going to get out of it. It's what you give in that relationship. And of course, it's like everything else. You can't have one side doing all the giving. You can't have unrealistic. So here's some keys on helping in this problem of the relationship, these relations in a marriage. First of all, communication is communication of the issues. You have to communicate one to another. You have to find out what's the problem. So many times, so many couples, one will be upset with the other one because they don't feel that person is pulling their weight, whether it's in chores around the house, whether it's in the bedroom, all those sort of things. And there's a difference there. And, you know, they don't recognize it, but they have those issues there and they don't communicate. You have to understand what the other person's priorities are. What do they want? And so you have to put those things kind of in an open forum, an open meeting. You have to talk about those things. You have to be open about those things. You have to be. It's a shame to speak of those things which are done in silence, right? It's a shame to speak of those things that are done behind closed doors. The Bible talks about those things. But these are conversations for a husband and a wife. And these are conversations not to be had or shouldn't be had with somebody else. I know these count. I got a guy, him and his wife went to counselors. The counselor said, well, you need to do this. You need to do that. You know, it'll fix your marriage. You know, and it all had to do with the bedroom stuff. And that's that. The bedroom is the reward. Right. Of everything it was done prior to. And people don't understand. It's kind of like the icing on top of the cake. It shouldn't be everything. And so this world, our culture focuses so much on those things. They think that's the big to do. It's not the case. It's not the case. Talk to a couple who's been married 65 years. It's not like when I look back at when I first got married and I thought I was in love when I married my wife, I thought I was in love. And then about 5 years down the road, I look back and I kind of giggled. And now I look back and go, we were just two stupid kids. I didn't really know what love was because we hadn't experienced, we hadn't gone through all the problems and the trials and the tribulations in life to realize, you know, the attractiveness surely brought us together, but it didn't keep us together. You know what brought us together? It was God and his book. That's what kept us together. And so it is understanding the other person's priorities. Find out what they are. Find out. And they're going to be fluid. They're going to, here, I got a guy that works for us. His wife just had a baby Thursday afternoon. And it was a rough pregnancy. She has been dilated for almost a month and a half. She's been effaced. This is how she carries her kid. I mean, the kid could literally just about drop out, ready to come out. And so it has changed for him the relations with his wife, of course. And this is not his first kid. This is his fourth child. They had a little baby girl. They had two boys, two girls. You know, I said, what's the problem, John? He said, well, he said, and he's honest. He goes, Jim, you don't understand. He says, we don't have TV in our house. I think about it a minute. And he starts to give me that smile on his face. I go, John, you got to get some other hobbies. Really, seriously, man. Yeah. He says, well, I've been working on my hobbies, but you know, it's been a while. You know, he's telling me about it. Now, let me ask you, could he get upset about that? Yes, I said, you're the one who got her pregnant, right? That's what I told him. Well, yeah. I said, well, okay, now you made your bed. You got to sleep in it now. Well, I'm on a couch. I said, whatever. So, right? So, during some of those times, the relations changes. Is it always going to be that way? No. What he talks about there, the defrauding, look in verse number 5. Defrauding not one the other, except... All right, so there's an exception to the rule. What's the exception to the rule? Except to be with consent for a time. In other words, you may have to take a break for certain things. You may have to say, hey, you know what? I've got this issue or that or whatever it is. But both parties say, all right, we're going to, you know, whatever the purpose, it's consent for a time that you may give yourselves. And apparently what Paul's talking about, to fasting and prayer. There's an issue. It's probably a spiritual issue that Paul's talking about. And so we're going to avoid each other in that relations and that position. We're going to pull ourselves apart from that and give ourselves a fasting and prayer and come together. There it is. You come back together. That Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. So if the two of you, verse number 5, have a consent, you're taking a break. But I'm going to point out what Paul puts at the end of the verse, that Satan tempts you not for your incontinency. Ladies or men, doesn't matter which one, if one of you are cutting the other person off in your sex life, it's like what we're seeing there in verse number 5, except it wasn't with consent, it was without consent. And what do you think? The end of that verse says this. This is for a couple who had consent one with another, and they broke apart in that relationship. Not that you're, I'm not saying divorce or anything like that, just in a sexual relationship. And there's a fasting and prayer connected with it. But he says there, and he says, watch out why Satan will come in there and do stuff. He'll do a work. That's what he's talking about. So I tell people this, in that relationship, if the fella or the wife cuts the spouse off, right, in that relationship, you're allowing the devil to come in now at the end of that verse and does, what's he do? He'll tempt you for your incontinency. In other words, a fellow will start to look somewhere else. A woman will start to look something somewhere else if that occurs in the marriage. So it's not to be taken lightly. It's not one of those things that you would, you know, and I'll be honest, I haven't counseled anybody that ever has done this where they both consented, but there it is. Paul puts it in. There's a reason for it. There's a purpose for it. So the keys are understanding the priorities, putting the other person ahead of you. And listen, this kind of relationship must be a two-way relationship. I mean, think about it this way. Christ expects things from you and I in our relationship to him, does he not? Now, what happens if the scriptures say, be holy as I am holy? That's what the quote is, right? Well, if you're living like the devil, you're living like the world. That's not how Christ wants you to live. And because of that, there's a brokenness in that relationship. There's a fellowship that will be missing because you're walking in darkness and he is walking. He is light. And if we walk in the light, we have fellowship with him. And so there are things Christ, even in our perfect relationship to him, I mean perfect in this manner, that someday it will be totally perfect, new bodies, all that kind of stuff. But he expects things in that relationship for us to do. And so it's a two-way thing. So expectations should be set. Christ had them for you and I. Expectations should be set in a marriage, especially in terms of the sexual relationship. And sometimes they have to be reset. They change over time. I gave you the illustration of children. Sometimes it's the responsibilities. Sometimes just your age or your health will change things. And so it's not what you get out of it. It's what the marriage, both of you, get out of it. Hey, listen, if your wife becomes ill and she's sick and there go, you know, your sexual relationship is not what it used to be. And I know guys that get in the corner. Seriously? This is the woman you married that you love and she brought children in the world for you? And you're complaining because you're not getting what you want? See, this is the difference between Christianity and everything else in the world, because you have the scriptures, you have God who can satisfy all your longings. He can meet the needs. He can give you the grace. If the need isn't met, he'll give you the grace to get through whatever you're going through. That is a huge advantage for the Christian in this particular case, for sure. And so, just like you make time for fellowship with Christ, a marriage is the same in that way. You have to have time. We have fellowship. I mean, I read articles. I read people and all that kind of stuff. The focus is on that relationship, or should be, with Jesus Christ. It's no different. I read through the Song of Solomon, all right, a couple times this past week. And, you know, as I read the whole book as a whole, you know what I find about the bride and the groom in the book of the Song of Solomon is this? It's like they're kids and they never fell out of love. And I go, what is the key to that? Remember in the book of Revelation, a couple of churches there, he says, thou hast left thy first what? Love. Repent and do works. And what's he saying? Get back to where you were. So there's something to be said about the marriage relationship is to have that bond and that fellowship that is so needful. I tell this to guys all the time. Quit talking to your wife for an entire month. How's that relationship going to shake out for you? Not very good. You know, people talk about, well, who was I reading somebody article? Some Hollywood couple. Well, she's not a Hollywood couple. He is. But they've been married 40-some years, which is astounding for Hollywood. But they said Friday night is date night. They specifically set time. And listen, we live in a world that is so busy, and we are all so busy, you need to make some time for it. If that relationship means anything to you, you have to have that time factor. If you want to have fellowship with the Lord, you want to walk with the Lord, you set time, whether it's in the morning, I don't care, afternoon, but you set some time aside where it's just you and the Lord, and you're praying and talking and fellowshipping with Him. Why? Because you need that. Marriage is built on years and years of experience and trial and trouble, and you start to go through things, and as you go through things, you know, it seems like the hurdles get higher and bigger and farther, but you know, with the Lord's help and you two working together and having that kindness, that benevolence, you get through the next one, and you look back and you go, wow, the Lord's brought us through a lot, brought us through a ton. And so the expectations should be talked about. They will be set at some times. They get reset because of whether it's age or health. All these things happen, but Song of Solomon is a picture of the love of Christ and His bride. That's what it's a picture of. And I noticed that they never fall out of love throughout the whole book. I mean, I was circling all the, he's talking about her different, you know, her neck or his, you know, he's talking about this and that, all these different. I mean, a neck. You ever look at your wife's neck? Oh, man, that's, you got a beautiful neck. I'm reading that stuff and I'm going, I never looked at her neck really in that, like, wow, that's, she's got a hot neck, man. I mean, this, it's a neck. You swallow. But you look at that. At either Solomon or the bride there, and you look at that, and then they're talking about, oh, his feet. I'm like, his feet? You ever see Tim's feet? He's got a toe that goes over the other toe like that. Jesters have socks on them all the time. He leaves the sock on. What? I mean, so all these things, but you read through it, and you go, you know what that is? I'm a guy. I go, that's mushy, gushy garbage, man. What are you talking? No, what you find out is there's from head to toe, that groom loves you head to toe. And you ain't perfect. Not a single one of you in here is perfect. myself included, there's no one here perfect. You're never going to have, this idea of perfection. They were interviewing, they were 25 to 30-year-old women, and they said, tell us your ideal spouse. And they go down a checklist. How tall? How much money? What's he do for a living? But they go to this whole list. And these girls, the average height that they wanted a man to be is 6'3". 6'3" and taller makes up a little less than 1% of the population. So these girls want these tall guys. And so they're talking to these gals and say, well, so it's, you know, what they want. And all these things are carnal things. They're not spiritual things. They're not biblical things in any stretch. How much does he need to make? How much is the guy going to make that you would eventually marry? What's that number? It was $200,000 or more, which is in, I think it was 3 or 4 percentile of men make 200 grand or more. You know what the average guy makes? 38,000 a year. So they go through all this list and they tell the girls, well, you want something that only occurs in about 1% of the men in America. And that's what you want to marry. And then the guy goes, where are you at? Are you a 10? Are you a 9? Are you an 8? And they're all like, well. And they're always overrating themselves. The one girl, I'm a 7. I'm like, honey, you're 2. Okay. I lucked out. I'm about a 3 and I married a 7. So I'm really happy about that. Wow. I cracked myself up. But young ladies now, their expectations are set on all these carnal things. Not one of the questions was about their spirituality. It was about belief in God, all that kind of stuff. And so this is where America is going culturally. You know, these expectations. In other words, you're finding young people are not getting married anymore because they can't find what they think they deserve or they should have. And it's beyond the realm of reality. And of course, that you end into those things with all kind of problems. But Solomon talks about being lovesick in chapter 2, verse number 5. You can read the Song of Solomon on your own. He talks of the commitment of each over there and each other in chapter 2, verse number 16. Talks of never being separated in chapter 3, verse number 4. All these things they talk about. They always want to be around each other. They're attached at the hip, they say. And generally, when someone gets married, man, that first year or two, man, it's like they're always together. There's we call them love birds. We call it the honeymoon, right? Until the first year after the honeymoon. A little advice that I think you find throughout Solomon and what you find in the New Testament, whether you're looking at the churches, is this. Always try to hold on to that first love kind of thing, that desire for each other, that wanting to be around each other. It's crazy now. The kids are gone and the house is empty. We're home alone. It's like, man, I kind of miss this. I kind of miss before we had kids what it was like. And we're kind of there now a little bit until we get new kids that move in the basement. And so we're just kind of like, man, this is kind of nice. It's like, you know, it's like, hi, how, who are you? Kind of a thing. Christ views her in the book of Song of Solomon, chapter 4, verse number 7, without spot. Listen, you and I have got wrinkles and spots and all kinds of blemishes. And the adage there in chapter 4 of Song of Solomon is this: when he looks at her, all he sees is her good points. My goodness. You know, you hear young people all the time, or young couples, well, you know, a young girl thinks she's going to change him. That's why dating isn't, courting, however, whatever you want to put it, is so important to find out the character of that person. Because, listen, you're not going to change him. Young lady, you're not going to change him. And young man, you're not going to change her. The Lord's got to change him from the inside out. That's how those things work. And so as the Lord looks at us without spot, he doesn't see the bad stuff. He only sees the good stuff. That's what you actually have to look for in that relationship. You have to look for the things that are positives, because there's always going to be negatives. There's always going to be this or always going to be that. And it's one of those things where, to give an example, would be Martha and Mary, as far as a relationship. Both of those ladies had a relationship with Jesus Christ, right? Martha and Mary did. And Martha was cumbered about with what she was doing. In other words, she's a picture of someone who does their duty in a marriage. They're a picture of someone in the church or someone with who is focused on service, right? Focused on service, focused on duty. And Martha did her job well. She took care of the situation. Everything was going on. But who chose the better part? Mary did. What did she choose? She chose the part of worshiping him. She chose the part of walking with him, fellowshipping with him. In other words, as a Christian in our relationship to the Lord, you can be in service to him. You can be fulfilling your duty as a Christian, doing all those things right, but you're really not walking with him. And in a marriage relationship, listen, you can be going to work, doing your 9-to-5, getting the money, paying the bills, all that kind of stuff. You can be doing those things, right? That's the service. That's your duty. The protective things, the things that a man is supposed to be doing, you can be doing those things, and those are things of service or duty. But Martha truly did not have the relationship with the Lord that Mary did. Here's what I can tell you this morning. You want both. A good marriage is when both of you are doing both those things. You're doing your duty as a wife, as a husband, but you're also walking hand in hand, side by side. And that's key. So it's like those things. You might be great at your service, your duty, that kind of things. But when it comes to your walk, Mary had it. And that's what you and I need. You need that in that relationship. Back to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Paul goes on, look at verse number 6. But I speak this by permission and not of commandment. For I would that all men were even as myself, but every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner, another after that. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. And that's what I was talking about before. Paul is talking here about the fact that Paul never got married. He could serve the Lord with singleness of heart. He didn't have, as the Bible would say here, distraction for the needs of a wife. And so he was singly focused that way. And he talks about here the widows as well. It's good for them that they abide in his eye. But if they cannot contain, let them marry. For it's better to marry than to burn. That burning in lust one toward another kind of a thing. He says it's better to get married and sit that way. You can't. I mean, this is the reason why you have so many problems in, let's say, the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church tells a priest he has to be celibate. And, you know, I don't know if they're trying to make everybody like Paul. But listen, Paul talks about it here. Paul had the ability. He had a gift that way where he didn't have to be married. But most men who are red-blooded men, and they're going to have those desires for a woman. He says there in verse number 9, but they cannot contain, let them marry. For it's better to marry than to burn. And that is a true statement Paul puts out. And so that's where the thing comes out at. Look at verse number 10. And unto the marry I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not the wife depart from her husband. But if she departs, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. And let not the husband put away his wife. But to the rest speak I, not the Lord. If any brother hath a wife that believeth not, and she be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. And the woman which hath a husband that believeth not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. So now you have a condition here where one party got saved, trusted the Lord after the marriage. And so you have one party who is a saved individual and the other party who is not. And Paul gives his commandments on those things, verse 11 and 12. He talks about those things, but
All those things have to do with the believing and unbelieving there in verse number 13 and 14. And so he talks about that relationship as far as what you do in the marital relationship there in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. All right, I am going to take a break there. We'll pick it up next week, finish out here, and then we'll talk about in-laws or family. All right, take a break there.